Not as the is the microphone on your computer?
The microphone is on my computer.
Okay. That's fine. I'm just asking in case I ask a question later and want the people who are on their desktops to be able to hear it.
To hear it, yeah.
Oh. And just apply my
voice. Are you able to record?
I am recording it right now, yes.
Okay, wonderful.
Yeah, I just started recording it. Yes.
Well, then you have to ask me questions, right? Oh, I will.
Let's start now, or are you ready?
Yeah, I guess, if everybody's here.
If I talk, can I hear me?
I don't know.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for coming to our second TAG meeting. We have three people called in right now. We have three of the other TAG members in person. This is John Coon. So Nada's going to give a project update in a second. Tim Vincent from the Hinckley Foundation is in here, Matt Young from the National Renewable Energy Lab, and Devin Walker from BASF. Three of the TAG members, and there's six students as well in the back that may be asking questions too, I guess. But thanks for participating, and we'll be glad to have any questions answered as Nada goes through this. We'll double check if it's here, please.
Yeah, I haven't changed any. I haven't changed anything. Yeah, everybody is still on. Everything is on.
Okay, are you ready?
Can everybody hear me?
Yes. Yes, this is Fiona on Balaban. I can hear you if you can hear me.
Okay, yes. Thank you. We hear you. Thank you.
We're just making.
Okay, very good. Thanks.
She's in my office. Yes, Johnny.
All right. Okay. So good afternoon, everybody. I'm Nada El-Sayed. I'm going to talk to you today about a project update for single-step conversion of landfill gas to liquid hydrocarbon fuels.
Hey, this is John Shear.
Good afternoon. We're about to start. You're right on time.
Great. I'm gonna mute my mic.
Okay.
But sometimes when I don't, it gives feedback.
No problem.
Thank you.
Okay, so basically our motivation for this project is, as you guys already know, fossil fuels are a finite resource. Being in the U.S., we rely heavily on foreign oil. So an alternative fuel source that is locally made is essential. Also, the EPA has set an alternative fuel mandate requiring 36 billion gallons per year by the year 2022. And the Air Force has set their own goal of 50% alternative fuel by next year, 2016. And these are the most up-to-date numbers. Also, we have increasing amounts of greenhouse gases being emitted into the atmosphere. We'd like to minimize those or at least not increase them. So there are many alternative fuel types under research. There's solar energy, geothermal energy, wind energy, hydrogen fuels, algae fuels. For our purposes, we would like to focus on biomass energy. So basically, the U.S. generates more than 250 million tons of municipal solid waste each year, and most of that goes into landfills. And basically what happens is anaerobic digestion and things like that eat into the waste, and it generates what is known as landfill gas. Landfill gas is mostly composed, as you see from the pie chart in the top right-hand corner, is mostly carbon dioxide and methane. And of course, because it is from solid waste, there is also some contaminants, halides, sulfides, and things like that. Why methane is so useful for our purposes is because it's used as a feedstock in many industrial processes. methanol synthesis, ammonia synthesis, and when reformed to syngas, it's a feedstock, it has potential to become liquid fuels. Currently, less than 15% of municipal solid waste is utilized for energy. We would like to see that number increase. And being here in Florida, we're at a geographical advantage because we produce the most biomass in the U.S., 7% of the total. So, one more methane fact. Methane is the second most important greenhouse gas after carbon dioxide. And it is actually 20 times more powerful than CO2 in the sense that it traps energy much more efficiently. So pound for pound over a 100-year period, it has a larger effect on the Earth's atmosphere than CO2. Landfills account for 18% of the man-made source of methane, with natural gas petroleum products accounting for about 30%, 29% roughly. Enteric fermentation and various other processes account for the remaining. So how is landfill gas currently being utilized? It is being flared, burned for electricity. The methane is being condensed. However, there's also our approach, which is to upgrade the landfill gas to liquid hydrocarbon fuels in a single-step process for converting the methane and the CO2 to diesel fuel and jet fuel using proprietary catalysts for that. And I will have to point out that there was an undergraduate design group that did an extensive economic analysis on the process of utilizing landfill gas. What they discovered was that the process is has a high investment, but it also has a high return. However, diesel fuel needs to cost a little over $4 in order for the process to be economically feasible. So basically, to achieve our overall goal, we've broken the project into four smaller goals. We would like to reform methane at low temperatures, less than 450 degrees C, and that will help in our final step for Fischer Tropsch. And I'll go into more details as to why we need a temperature less than 450 degrees. We want to convert at least 10% of the methane into CO2. We would like to maintain a hydrogen to CO ratio of 2:1, and again, that's for our final step, which is the Fischer Tropsch synthesis step. So I will tell you some of the challenges that we have currently faced and the challenges that we anticipate. Some of the solutions that we've come up with. So reforming is not favored at low temperature. In fact, coking is the favored reaction at low temperatures. So reforming readily occurs at temperatures higher than 600 degrees Celsius, something like that. But because we want to use a single step process, we need to be in the Fischer-Tropsch temperature range, which is less than 450 degrees Celsius. So what we've done is we've created a catalyst that had a little bit of platinum on it, along with nickel and magnesium, and I'll go into more details about our catalyst later on. And that effectively reduced the temperature for the reforming. We also would like to have a 2:1 hydrogen to CO ratio, but that is hard to achieve with dry reforming only, which is what we've been doing so far. So in the next phase, we're going to combine dry reforming with steam reforming in order to improve the hydrogen to CO ratio to the desired 2:1. We anticipate that once we get to the Fischer-Tropsch step, that our catalyst is going to deactivate quickly. So what we're going to do is we're probably going to study promoter effects. We're going to have a promoter effect study for the Fischer-Tropsch catalyst in order to improve the resistivity of the catalyst to deactivation. So basically what happens in our process is a series of reactions. We have the reforming reactions. We have been so far doing the dry reforming reaction, which is the very first reaction right there. But then we're going to couple that in the future with steam reforming, which is going to be the second reaction. And, of course, there's going to be a little bit of partial oxidation of methane that could occur, too. We have a side reaction that occurs, which is the water gas shift reaction right here. And I'm going to show you how we know that we have that from some of the results that I'll show in the next couple of slides. And then, finally, we have the Fischer-Tropsch reaction, which is essentially what makes our synthesis gas into hydrocarbon fuels. The overall The overall delta H is negative convection is exothermic because of Fischer tropes. So Fischer tropes can have a delta H of minus 1100 or more depending on the hydrocarbon chain that we get at. So basically our process has been broken down into three major stages. We have a synthesis stage, a characterization stage, and then finally our forming stage. For the synthesis, we've synthesized a series of catalysts, and I'm sorry that you can't see the picture very well, but the catalysts are synthesized on a series of zirconia support using wetness impregnation and co-precipitation method. We loaded nickel and magnesium in an 8-weight percent loading, and then we loaded from 0 to 2% platinum, and then we characterized all these catalysts in order to determine our optimum catalyst for reforming. For the characterization, we characterized the catalyst using temperature program reduction, XRD for the crystal structure, nitrogen fizzy sorption, and temperature program desorption of CO2. So a typical temperature program reduction profile will be one of those profiles. I've compiled all of the catalysts that we've tested onto one graph to kind of show you the effect of adding the metals. So having the support only has a reduction peak, the support only has a reduction of roughly about 600 degrees. Adding nickel and magnesium with no platinum has a reduction peak of about 360 degrees. And then if we only add 0.2% platinum, the reduction is effectively decreased to about 260 degrees Celsius. 0.5% platinum had a reduction peak of 243 degrees C. And then we tested 1% platinum and 2% platinum. As you can see, they still had lower reduction peaks than 0.2 and 0.5%, but there's a threshold to which it doesn't decrease that much anymore. And if we want to implement this on a larger scale, then we want to use the least amount of precious metal possible because it's expensive.
Can I interrupt for a second?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. do you get to feel, is that a reduction feature on the 0% platinum? Is that due to the support, do you think, or is that the
this one or this one? The blue line or the orange one?
The one labeled zero platinum, so sorry, that's one of the nickel and magnesium.
So the zero platinum, it has nickel and magnesium. You asked me if it was just a support or if it was because of nickel and magnesium.
Well, right, so the series zirconia, right, has no added metals?
The series zirconia, has no added metals on it.
So presumably that's the, cerium reduction?
Yeah.
And I just wasn't sure if, what your thoughts were on that.
So literature has disagreed a lot in this area, and I did a lot of background research on this specifically for that question. So we know that the support does get reduced a little bit. Just having nickel and magnesium with no platinum gives us that earlier reduction peak. We know that perhaps the support takes part in that. Reduction. That's really all I could say is that it probably is because this area is getting reduced slightly.
Sure.
Yeah.
And second part, it might be interesting to look at. It's kind of a comment. It looks like as you start adding more platinum, certainly the area of the water, the reduction peak is much higher,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I don't know that. I think you have more area if you integrate it under.
The peak is also narrower, so it's higher, but it's also narrower. So
yeah, well, it might be interesting to integrate the areas of the peaks and see basically how much water you formed or how many reducible species there were at different compositions. All right, thank you.
Okay.
So this analysis is measuring the reaction with the different catalysts, and the output is the master charge that you can see. You're measuring water, is that what you're doing?
We're measuring water, but this is not the reaction. This is just the reduction property of the catalyst. And the reaction also the reaction.
So what are you actually measuring when you run this? I'm not familiar with it.
I'm measuring, these lines are basically the water signal. So I'm measuring the reduction property of the catalyst, how likely the catalyst is to get reduced at a low temperature, and then that will...
You're actually reducing the catalyst.
I'm reducing the catalyst, just reduced under hydrogen, but only reducing the catalyst. So that helps me determine... Next, we characterize the catalyst using X-ray diffraction. And what's important to note here, for those of you who are not familiar with diffraction lines and XRD, is the very top diffraction line is just for the support material for Ceres zirconia, and it shows that it has a cubic fluorite structure, which means that the zirconia is incorporated into the ceria. So essentially, we've synthesized the correct support. And then the next line that I would like you to look at is the one that doesn't have any platinum, but it has nickel and magnesium on it. You can see here that there are diffraction peaks associated with nickel and magnesium. So again, nickel and magnesium got loaded onto the support. For the other catalysts that don't have that have platinum on it, there are no platinum peaks, which is expected because platinum is in very small quantities, so it wouldn't be detectable by the X-ray. Next, we characterize the catalyst using nitrogen physisorption, and basically what that does is it tells us the surface area of the catalyst, the pore volume, the pore diameter, things like that. We would like to have a catalyst that has as high a surface area as possible. So the support only had, of course, the largest surface area, which is expected. Loading metals onto the support decreased the surface area, which we also expected that, and it's consistent with the literature because some of the pores are getting slightly blocked by the metals. So we expected that.
No, Donna, this is a question that I've had when I've done synthesis like this, but I've never tried to answer it myself, so I'm going to put it on you.
That's fine.
Which is, when you have your support, it's got the highest surface area, and then you do an incipient wetness, and you add the other nickel, magnesium, or platinum. I was wondering, if you basically did the impregnation with just water, and calcine your material, but there's no metal there. It's nothing to block the pore. I'm wondering, have you done that, and do you think you might?
I have not done that.
See a surface
as a control.
Area decrease. Yeah, as a control.
I haven't done that at all. But yeah, as a control to see whether or not the surface area would decrease.
Or if it's just another thermal thing, but yeah, that might be.
Yeah.
Science, great science is to have good controls.
Put it on the laundry list of
Well, that's actually it. That's worth looking into.
Yeah. And depending on what conditions, just kind of the hydrothermal stability of
the
materials is important.
So the calcination.
After you do that, you can tell your tag committee, because one of the people in the room wrote the Wikipedia page on Cynthia Wetness.
Oh, okay. Okay, we can add a little line there. Okay. Next, we did desorption studies using CO2, and basically what the desorption studies tells us is the basicity of the catalyst. We'd like the catalyst to be as basic as possible. So we did a control experiment. We did a blank experiment, and nothing got desorbed, which was great. So then we... our support only desorbed a little bit. Now this is like highly zoomed. So in the next slide, you will see the actual numbers when we integrate it under the curves, and you'll see they're very, very small numbers. This is an extremely zoomed in graph, if you will. Oh, excuse me. Sorry, I need to go back. Yeah. Okay. Not having any platinum had the largest amount of CO2 desorb, but having 0.5% platinum had slightly less CO2 desorbed, and the difference was extremely small. The difference was, I think, from 1.4 micromoles to 1.3 micromoles, so not that big of a difference at all. So basically, to recap our characterization stage, our surface area decreased when we added when we loaded it with metals. But our reduction temperature, which is one of our goals, we would like to drive the reduction temperature as low as possible, was best probably for the 0.5% platinum catalyst, because going to much higher loadings mean a more expensive catalyst if this is implemented on an industrial scale. For the amount of CO2 desorb, like I said, the difference between not having any platinum and having 0.5% platinum was very, very small. We're talking about micromoles per gram of catalyst. So again, the 0.5% platinum catalyst is probably one of the better catalysts that we've synthesized. Next, we did the actual reforming experiments. So this is done on the 0.5% platinum catalyst, because that's the one that we would like to continue with in the next stages. We feel like this is the most promising catalyst. So what I'd like you to look at here is, over here, this area, there is no conversion of methane or CO2. As you can see, this is the methane signal, and this is the CO2 signal. It's flat, there's nothing there. And then this is where we have conversion. This is where we have conversion, and then this is the hydrogen and CO signal. But we also have a water signal, and this is where the reverse water gaseous reaction is happening, when I was mentioning before in the reaction and the series of reactions that I was talking about. So our results from the reforming, from the dry reforming experiment, I should say, basically, the support only had a 10% conversion, but it was at 800 degrees C, so we are pretty confident that the support does take a small part in the reaction. Having nickel magnesium only had a 10% conversion of 762 degrees Celsius, which is nowhere in the range that we want. Adding platinum does decrease the conversion temperature, and 0.5% platinum had the best conversion temperature, 454 degrees C, which is extremely close to our target temperature. I will have to point out, though, that we did not have the hydrogen to CO ratio of 2:1 that we needed. This is why we're going to do the steam reforming in the next phase. But we're definitely going to be continuing at the 0.5% platinum for the next part.
So, John?
Yes.
For the hydrogen to CO ratio here, I guess I didn't, well, I'm wondering what the feed conditions you had were. Was it like 50-50 methane?
We had a 1:1 methane to CO2 ratio.
Okay. And so I guess the reason why it's not close to 2:1 is you have enough reverse water gas shift going on that to drive it away from that. Okay. And that's at the...
We can adjust our feed composition. We can obviously adjust our input gas composition, but we want it to be as close as possible to landfill gas composition in terms of hydrogen to CO, so that was the reason for picking 1:1.
Sure, okay.
But you're right.
And is the, I'm not familiar, is 450, is that kind of the reverse water gas shift temperature? Is it pretty important at that temperature? Or I saw you had, I guess, that water peak.
Mm-hmm. In the previous slide.
I guess where's the maximum for that?
I'm not entirely sure exactly the temperature range for water gastric, but I don't have the lower temperature end, but the exact number, I'm not too sure with it right now.
Yeah, take it in. Okay, thank you.
But, you're welcome.
Do you have a guess? If you were to shift the composition of the methane and CO2, do you have a guess as to which way the shift would be beneficial for the branch?
If it would, if it would favor a higher hydrogen to CO, if it wouldn't, I don't want to say no. I'm not entirely sure what it would favor, but I can listen to that.
Because just because the composition of landfill gas is 50%, it's not a really good reason to stay with that in the process. If you were going to purify these anyway, so you could easily use some of the methane for something else.
Or more methane or more CO2.
So it's probably the other way. Probably more methane is better.
Because hydrogen can
react CO2, so it would probably increase CO2, would increase your reverse water gastric.
Yeah, and methane is the limiting, the hydrogen breaking is the limiting step.
But he's right. You could remove some of the CO2, I guess. Methane, okay. A lot better that way.
It's definitely worth checking out. That's definitely.
That's a lot easier than adjusting the hydrogen ratio.
The hydrogen to CO ratio. For the 0.5% platinum catalyst, we tested the catalyst stability and we left it on stream for just a little over 100 hours. What we found out is the catalyst is pretty stable, very minimal reactivation, although we feel like it might have been a glitch that it actually doesn't deactivate at all. And then we did post-reaction temperature program oxidation, and the catalyst didn't show any coking, which is great. These are the properties of a good catalyst: stability and minimal deactivation, minimal coking. So basically, to sum up, platinum did lower our reduction in reaction temperatures. 0.5% platinum has been the best catalyst of all the catalysts that we've tested. Dryer forming alone didn't produce the 2-to-1 ratio. So we can adjust the methane to CO2 ratio, like Mr. Vincent suggested and Dr. Young, or we can also couple steam reforming with dryer forming. Excuse me. The catalyst was stable with extended time on stream and there was no coking. So we're going to improve the hydrogen CO ratio. We're going to work on that. Then we're going to do our Fischer-Tropsch catalyst. We're going to synthesize and characterize it. And then we're going to put everything in the intensifier and get liquid fuels, our ultimate goal. Finally, I'd like to acknowledge the Hinckley Center for funding this project and the Graduate Student Success Fellowship at USF. And with that, I will open the floor to any questions.
Before we take questions, I want to say thanks to everybody for participating. And I wonder, forgot to mention at the beginning that Babu Joseph couldn't be here today because the only time that was possible to schedule this was when he was teaching, so he was able to participate. But I would love some more questions.
Nada, this is John on Balaban. It was a very good presentation. Thank you very much. As I mentioned to you before, I have another meeting that I have to go to. I really enjoyed your presentation. Thank you so much. And let me know if there is anything I can do. We can discuss later on. Thanks. Bye-bye. Hello?
Yes, thank you very much for attending.
Okay.
Hi, this is John Sherrod. I'm wondering, have y'all made any fuel yet?
we're getting there. This is the next step.
Can you make one, send me a little vial of it?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, great. Thank you. John Boulder gave me a little vial of fuel that he made, and it's one of my. It's in my treasure chest. It's a real special thing.
Okay.
So you were saying helium. I didn't catch the concentration of helium.
Helium is 40 cesium.
45. I was wondering what you thought, aside from the catalyst working well and high stability, what other challenges for landfill gas utilization, or are there any challenges? What are some of them? Talk about that.
So, for using actual landfill gas, contaminants are going to be a problem, or a challenge rather, not a problem. It's a challenge, and we're going to have to overcome all challenges, kind of see. Because sulfides and also siloxanes and things like that, they react with the catalyst. So it's going to be, ideally, we would like to have a pre-treatment step or a contaminant removal step before we treat it. That's one thing that we're looking at. Yeah, we would like to add as little steam as possible so that we don't increase the cost, obviously. So we're hoping to add just enough steam, as much steam as is already present in landfill gas, or just a little bit.
Well, the purifying landfill gas is going to have to be done. There's no way around that. When you do that, you're going to take your water out. So
we're going to add them back.
Mm-hmm.
In the economic studies you mentioned in the beginning, we used the iron adsorption step on, in terms of economic, you know, process simulation that works reasonably well in terms of...
for sulfide.
Yeah, for sulfides. And we did not treat siloxanes in the economic in the process simulation.
We have a project we're sponsoring down at Miami, FIU, on siloxanes and landfill gas. So you hope you're following.
Yeah, we are. The Tanzel, right? Yeah, we're familiar with that.
So do you know what methods are currently available for purifying landfill gas, where they're doing other fuels, compressed gas fuels?
Right now for purification, they're using adsorption mostly, using activated carbon. There's also absorption and deep chilling routes that they're looking into, or actually that are implemented on an industrial scale, but using activated carbon because it's the cheapest way to really make it. It's not very expensive.
I've got a question.
I'm sorry, yes?
Somewhere over in the UAE or somewhere over in that part of the world, there's a gigantic plant where they're converting natural gas into liquid fuels. Are you familiar with that project?
The one in Qatar?
Yes, yes. What process are they using?
I'm not entirely sure.
Okay. How many other people do you think around the U.S. are working on landfill gas to liquid conversion?
I don't know an exact number, but I'm sure more than a handful of groups are probably working on it.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Are you sure about that number?
No, I'm not sure about the numbers. I'm more than a handful, probably.
Hi, this is Kelsey Oswald.
Yep.
I was curious, have you actually used landfill gas in your testing, or are you using just manufactured gas at this point?
At this point, we're just using manufactured gas. We're not using actual landfill gas.
Ultra pure, probably.
Ultra pure, yes.
And does the ratio of CO2 to of carbon dioxide to methane make a difference to the process? So if you had a gas that was maybe younger or older and you start seeing some changes in those relative percentages, do you have any feel for how that would affect the project?
So ideally, a landfill, we would like to utilize the landfill gas in the landfill in the first 10 years. That's in terms of a real landfill. It has been suggested during the meeting that maybe we can try improving, adding more methane to try to improve our process a little bit. So having a methane-rich stream, that might be something that we would consider. I'm sorry, does that really answer your question? Or?
No, I just didn't know if the reactions that you're testing are dependent, because with what you're looking at is a fairly even ratio of carbon dioxide and methane, and whether if that ratio were different, how would that affect the performance of your catalyst and the actual conversion?
Having more methane will probably improve our conversion.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Stay tuned.
Yes, stay tuned.
Not, I have a question.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so this might be outside the scope of at least the, you know, next month, certainly, but and maybe other people in the room would know better. If you did want to try to test actual landfill gas, I don't know, is there a viability easily to get some of that bottled?
Sure. We'll help you find some.
Okay.
With all those impurities.
That's fine. That's part of the project to check that out, so it's okay.
Okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure if that was how flaring easily there. What the gas handling capabilities were.
I think we could get you some. Okay. John, you on?
Yeah. I was just wondering how, what would you get, an old propane tank and a little pump and
something? we have empty tanks.
We should talk to, Heather at Cornerstone would know that.
Okay, I do. I'll ask
John.
Her on the phone the other week. I'll...
Excuse me?
I talked to her on the phone last week. I didn't ask her that question, though. I didn't.
That'd be a great question. She'd be a good person to answer that.
Devin, any more questions?
For those of you joining us remotely, does anybody have a question?
Well, what's the typical nitrogen concentration in the gas?
It's about 4%. It was in that initial pie chart that I showed of landfill. You're talking about composition in the landfill gas. Is that correct?
Right. Correct.
About 4%, give or take.
Talk to the people of Polk County and see what the pressure is that they're using to transport the gas next door to the co-combustion plant here that's used to be owned by Wheel Operator, now it's owned by Energy Partners Corporation. there's a plant right next door to the landfill, and they burn tires and waste wood and gas from the landfill. And there's a big old, like, 12-inch pipeline that goes over there. About compressibility of the gas and that kind of thing. What kind of pressures you can get, you could put it to in terms of filling up a cylinder somewhere with gas. Maybe you could take a propane bottle over to Polk County and hook it up to their pipe and open up the valve. You know, have a pressure gauge on it, see how much you can get in there, and then take it home.
Sample bags may be enough for you. I don't know.
Remember, you. I'm sorry. Tim, what were you saying?
We don't need that much gas, but we have empty tanks, and you could probably just, if it's slightly pressurized, you could probably just pressurize.
I think even a sample bag or a few sample bags might do it a little safer than compressing it.
I was wondering, is Sam still on?
Yes, he is.
Okay. I was going to ask Sam, what are the issues involved with, you know, putting some landfill gas in a pressurized container?
John, I unplugged my microphone. Can I get rid of your message saying somebody's got to pull the plug? So, we typically pull landfill gas out at a vacuum of maybe 60 inches of water. So that's the kind of pressure you can expect to find at a landfill that's actively using its gas or flaring its gas.
60?
So if they want to pressurize it and put it in a cylinder or something, how do they do that?
You can tap off it. If it's being sent to a flare, it's going to be pressurized. It's going to be pressurized at about the same as it's being sucked out of the landfill. So 60 inches of water, maybe.
And what's that convert to in, like, PSI? Is that like 2 or 3 PSI?
Yeah. Not all that much. If you pull too hard, you're just going to cause all kinds of problems.
Right. That's too much. They want to try some real landfill gas, and so we're scheming on how to get them some real landfill gas.
I could most likely get that if that's what they want.
Yep, that's what they want. So they can use some real landfill.
Okay, I'll do what I can do. I'll let you know.
Thanks, Sam. Sam knows, you know, everybody on the planet, and they all like you.
I wish. As long as my microphone's working, I've got a question. What was that in the very beginning when you said your goal is to convert 10%? What happens to the other 90%?
It's for a single. But, in the table that I showed at the very end, I showed 50% conversion also. It's just we would just like to be at least 10%. That's the only, just not lower than 10%.
Okay, so I'll repeat my question. What happens to the other 90%?
It's single pass, so I guess we can recycle it.
Okay, so you'd go multi-pass to improve that?
Yeah, that's one of the possibilities.
And a follow-up question. You said siloxanes and sulfide would hurt the process. Would they attack the platinum?
They deactivate the catalyst. Yeah, that's correct. They poison the catalyst.
You can't get away from either one of them when you're dealing with landfill gas, so I'm not sure how to deal with that issue.
In terms of the sample that you might send us, or in terms of our process?
In terms of your process. You're not going to find siloxane-free or sulfide-free landfill gas.
Right. Well, we would like to, either way, it has to, there has to be a cleanup step, contaminant removal step, before we utilize the landfill gas.
Okay, understood. I'll see if I can get you some dirty gas and you can clean it up.
That's okay.
Thank you.
anybody who was joining us remotely, does anybody have any more questions? Hello? Okay, well.
One more for me, thank you. It was very interesting coming in the middle. I didn't have the background.
That's okay. Thank you for joining us.
A lot of it is way over my head, and I'm a chemist.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, and we'll post this on the website. We'll post the presentation, and thank you again. We'll keep you updated.
Great. Okay, appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you.